A house is made of wood and stone, but only love can make a home. Welcome to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, helping you make your home into one you'll love even more. Here are your hosts, Dan Hansen and Betsy Thompson.
Well, happy Saturday, everybody. Happy Saturday to you, Betsy.
Happy Saturday, Dan.
We're off to another great start.
Saturday is
now officially better than it was just a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm. Right? I've got my coffee and I'm ready to go. So, hey, I went out to a job site this week to look at some...
You're into the show.
Well, how do you know I'm into the show?
Well, you went to a job site. That doesn't sound like fun talk.
Oh, it was fun, though, because I was out there to look at some paint problems and to offer some solutions. And there were all kinds of little things that people tend to do wrong that can actually lead to big problems. And sometimes these are things that people don't know they should be doing at all. So today I thought that I would share some of those with the listeners so they can avoid these same potential problems.
So it was about the show.
Yeah.
So you really were straight into the show.
Yes, well...
Okay, I just want to establish that
you sometimes drag it out, so...
Correct. Uh-huh. So 1 point for me for being right on something.
And 1 point for me for getting into the show.
I guess so.
Right.
Also, today we're going to be talking with Holland Fire Marshal Brett Groendyke about some different things we can do to make sure our homes are safe should something really bad happen. That's coming up in a little bit.
Yep, but before we get to that, we're going to talk about something really exciting. Caulk. Isn't that fun?
Super exciting.
Aren't you excited?
I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
And we're in the studio with Bill Sawtell, a manufacturer's rep from Tower Sealants, and it's up to Bill to really infuse this topic with a lot of pop and energy.
Yes.
Bill, good luck, and thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
We're happy to have you. Now, at home, when I was growing up, my mom painted everything. We've talked about that on the show.
Yes, the entryway got smaller and smaller and smaller.
She painted everything all the time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we'd think we were in the wrong house because it's a new color and it was a different color in the morning. But anyway, in all that painting, I don't think I've ever seen her use caulk. Mm-hmm. So when I started working at Repco Light a bunch of years ago and I started selling caulk, I was completely
confused.
What is
this?
What is this for? What are they doing? I was that dumb about it. Bill, why don't we just start with what's the purpose of caulk? For the people like my mom. Mom, listen to Bill.
Well, the purpose of the sealant is to fill a gap or a void between two different substrates. And when you do it properly and it joins it all together and then you do the painting over, the project looks seamless.
Mm-hmm.
But it also has other values, like around a window and door, it'll keep cold air from getting in, keep moisture from getting in, things like that. So it has a lot of good purposes.
A lot of different reasons to use caulk, but there's a little bit of a problem that occurs. I was kind of looking into this and reading about some of the biggest mistakes, you know, the top 10 list of mistakes when using caulk. And the very first one is using the wrong caulk. That's the biggest mistake people make. And that sounds so simple to fix. But I looked at our rack of caulk, Bill, and I read all the labels for the first time in a long time. And there's silicones, there's siliconized acrylics, there's acrylic latexes, there's modified siliconized acrylics, acrylic urethane elastomerics, and on and on and on. There are so many options out there.
There are a lot of options, but I think maybe to simplify it, a customer could just look at the ratings. Manufacturers like to put 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, lifetime on a tube. And typically, the higher quality the material is, the more adhesive it is, and the more flexible it is. And so if I have a 50 or 60-year caulk or a lifetime caulk, something like that, it's going to be a lot better maybe than a 30 or 20-year type of a sealant. Just going to have better ingredients, better resins, more flexible, just better.
So does that mean that it's going to stick for 40, 50, a lifetime? Or what exactly does that mean?
It doesn't necessarily mean that, but it all really comes down to the quality of the product and the application itself. We can't control who puts it on, how much they put on. Do they put enough on?
Mm-hmm.
Do they smooth it out right? Do they tool it correctly? All of those things.
So instead of giving it a, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5-star rating, you just put years on it.
Yeah, it's a little bit of, a little bit of hyperbole from the, you know, the people that merchandise the products. But typically, you can tell a lot just by reading the label. Is it for windows and doors? Is it a painter's grade caulk? You know, there are things like that that will help you.
So let's say I'm caulking my trim. What would you recommend for me?
Well, I'd recommend a good product like our TowerTech 2 product, and I would use that like for trim and crown molding and things like that. You have to understand that this is going to be an adhesive that's got a lot of flexibility, and it'll adhere to just a large variety of substrates.
Now, is this the caulk that you've got? You brought some samples around where you had a piece of aluminum, I think it was, and a piece of wood?
Yes.
With caulk bridging the gap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was like an inch and a half or an inch gap. I mean, an inch of caulk, basically.
Yeah. It's
and you could stretch it.
Forever.
Yeah.
And it stuck to those surfaces and then sprung back. That's what
exactly.
You're talking about, right?
Yeah, the product has a 99% recovery when it's stretched, and it can elongate as much as 800%. And even put in a large joint where we're filling maybe a gap of a half inch or so between two substrates, it can exceed over 50% total joint movement. For trim, you have certain substrates that they're dimensionally unstable. In other words, they can shrink or they can expand, and then they can shrink again. Crown molding is one that you find in a house. It's going to expand during the summertime. It's going to shrink in the wintertime. It's going to pull away from the wall. So we want something that'll fill that gap between the wall and the crown molding and something that can move with it and not crack away.
So is that something that you're supposed to paint over once you have done the caulking of your trim and things like that?
Well that's an important factor. Everything we do at Tower Sealants is very closely associated with the paint industry. So from, you know, the people that formulate our products, they're all paint and caulking people, and mm-hmm. they understand that that our sealants need to be able to be painted over without any trouble at all.
Mm-hmm.
Everything we make at Tower Sealants is designed for the homeowner that's going to repaint their home and they want it to look better,
mm-hmm.
or for the professional contractor that's going to do the work. So we try to do everything to make those products as best we can for them.
Now, the TowerTech 2, that's interior, exterior, or just interior?
It's both. It would be a great product around windows and doors, and it's a very strong product. It has Kevlar in it. We're the only manufacturer that puts Kevlar in any
so
of our products.
So is it bulletproof?
No, it's not. It's not bulletproof.
Like even a little bit?
I've never tried it.
Okay.
Dan wants to make
a
bulletproof
vest out
yeah,
of caulk. Because it sounds cheaper.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So one of the questions that comes up right away is, we get this all the time in the store. I caulk my trim. When can I paint over it?
Well, it depends on a number of things. We make a product that can be painted over immediately. It's called the Accelerator, and it's a favorite with painting contractors that want to finish their caulking and maybe do the painting all in the same day and get out of off the job. So you can paint it within 30 minutes or spray right over it. But a product like TowerTech 2, we give it a 4 to 6 hour dry. But drying conditions can vary. If we're using it outside and temperatures are cold or something like that, or it's moist and humid, I might need an overnight dry on something like that. But the important thing is our products, unlike silicones and some of the urethane caulks, are very paintable. So just give them enough time and then you can safely paint over them.
So if I do get cracking, I mean, because that is one of the other issues that come up. I'm not saying with
sure.
your caulk and specifically, but customers will come in and the paint cracked over top of the caulk. What causes that and what's the fix?
Well, one of the things that's going on in the industry, paints are changing rapidly. So today, some new paint technology is coming in, and there are paints that are hybrids, meaning that some of the paints that are on the market today are oil and water together. They've got the leveling characteristics of oil, and they've got the toughness and the durability of the acrylics. Well, those type of paints are not highly flexible. So if I take a highly flexible caulk to use as my sealant, and then I come back with a paint that's not as flexible, and there's a lot of movement in the building, then possibly we could get some checking or crazing over our caulking simply because it's the two products are not maybe the best. They're not suitable as best they might be.
So that's a good reason to come into Rep Collect and Port City stores and ask us questions and let us help you find the right caulk to go with whatever paint you're choosing or whatever paint you may have left over at home in your basement and you're touching up something. Let us know so that we can help get you the right thing so you don't have these problems. Bill, I didn't think that a topic like this could actually fill out our time, but it has. I thought it was going to be, you know, oh, really? But
I
you
told
have
you Bill would be all right. You said he'd be boring. I'm sorry, Bill. That's the way she is with everybody.
I did not say that. That's okay.
Well, thank you. I don't know what to say.
Bill, we appreciate you playing along with us today.
Thank you.
Now, when we come back, Holland Fire Marshal Brett Grundyke joins us to help us understand what we need to know to be safe should we ever experience a fire in our homes. That's next. Stay tuned.
helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
And we're back.
We are back, at least. I'm back.
You seem to be back. I'm hoping the listeners are back.
Hold on. And Holland Fire Marshal Brett Grundyke is back because he's been here before.
He has been. He scared me once before with all the stuff he talked about.
Yes, and he's back to scare us all again. But that's good because it scares us into action and doing the things that we should be doing. Brett, thanks for being here.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me.
So obviously we're here to talk about fire and fire dangers, but let's start with what are some of the most common causes of fires that you see?
So here in the city of Holland, we go back through and review every single fire that we have and the cause, the origin, the property loss, any sort of losses that are associated with the fires. And what we found is that the three primary causes are cooking.
Mm-hmm.
At least this summer, fireworks was one of them. We believe, we're pretty confident in that. And then electrical issues. And we feel that one of the things that we can do the most about is some of these electrical issues that we're encountering.
Really? That's kind of scary to me when you say electrical, because it's something I generally don't want to touch, and that means I got to call somebody out to fix it. So what are the electrical issues that you're seeing?
So one of the things that we've seen over the summer is issues with electrical cords or extension cords, multi-tap, multi-plug adapters.
Okay.
So that adapter in my home where I've got 12 things all in a circle.
Yes.
And then four other adapters connected to it so I can get 12 more things attached.
Yes.
That's what you're talking about.
Exactly. Or it's a little early, but the dad in the Christmas story, if we all kind of remember that scene where there was about 30 things plugged into the Christmas tree.
I need to get one more
yes.
in there.
Yes. But in reality, that is what happens in people's homes is we get these overloaded multi-port adapters or extension cords that get abused to the point where they become the potential for flashpoints for fires.
Abused in what regard?
So they'll be kind of forced into areas where they shouldn't be, corners of walls, underneath rugs, and they'll be bent. And what that does is it damages the insulation on the cord. And as that damage is taking place over time, the amount of conductivity or the electricity that's actually in that cord can cause a lot of heating.
Mm-hmm.
And then especially if you have, let's say, a rug over top of the cord, that's an insulator, and it's going to act to retain more heat. Now, it's all going to be dependent on what you're using at the end of said cord.
Mm-hmm.
In one of the examples that we're discussing here as far as the fire that occurred here in the city of Holland, they had overloaded one of the electrical systems, and they were using a cord. And when that cord had been worn through and worn out, it was able to ignite carpet and some other things in the room, and that's what started the fire.
So how do we check our extension cords and our power strips and things like that to make sure? I mean, are there certain things that we should look for?
Yeah, absolutely. So the biggest thing to understand about electrical cords that we're using in our homes is they are not permanent wiring.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have something plugged in, whether you're trying to, use something that you don't quite have the reach for,
mm-hmm.
that's acceptable, but it's not permanent wiring. You're plugging it in because, like, the fan we've got here in the studio.
Right.
So if we didn't quite have the reach for that fan, mm-hmm. then you'd get the cord, plug it in. It's not permanent. We're only using it to extend the fan slightly farther because of reach.
But the fact that our ceiling lights are running off an extension cord is a problem.
That would be, yes. So,
because we also didn't have the reach.
I don't think you should tell him that.
They're
He's
not
the wrong person to
but
tell.
But that's what we're talking about,
yeah, exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah.
Using something permanent. Because we've all been through, well, I've been through houses when we were buying
uh-huh.
houses. And, oh, everything's nice. And you get to the basement and there's all these extension cords. I remember one where they're mm-hmm. run through the basement.
Yeah.
And they're
I
actually
lived in a house where they did that.
Oh,
they
really?
Ran an extension cord. They had cut it. And instead of using actual wiring, they had cut an extension cord, wired it in somehow, and it was an actual electrical source.
Wow.
in the home.
That's probably not good, right?
No. And those are the things, and when we're talking, kind of referencing back to this fire again, those are the things that if we can prevent those now, can hopefully limit more house fires in the future. And just discussing these things and letting people know that this is something that really happens. This actually happened to a family, and they lost their home. And this is something that we can do to avoid that.
Now, I know we did a segment, a long time ago. I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was about extension cords and all the different sizes and things. And we talked about some of this,
right?
You know, but we were mainly focusing on just how you get the right sized extension cord. But one of the things that I ran into was this exact conversation that putting them under rugs and doing things like that can be a problem. And you've got one aspect of the internet saying that it's a problem. You've got to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a large, very loud section saying that it's just fear-mongering and not so, that it's never going to create enough heat to start a fire. And you would dispute that.
Yes, yeah.
You've seen evidence of it.
Yeah, we've definitely seen true evidence of it. And again, things to avoid are going to be pretty much what we've just outlined is don't affix them within a structure. They shouldn't be affixed to any walls. They shouldn't be passing through ceilings. They shouldn't be passing underneath rugs, anything like that. That causes wear on the insulation, and it also causes a potential trip hazard. But they should only be used in terms of you're going to use it for a short period of time. You're going to use it for whatever appliance that you're running, whatever powered equipment that you're running. Mm-hmm. You're going to unplug it. You're going to wrap it back up, and then you're going to store it until you need it again.
I have to say, I am glad that you said all of those things and it's just extension cords and I don't have to call an electrician because at first I was very scared about what your answer was going to be.
Oh, that your whole electrical system in
your
home.
Yes, that there's like some wiring in my walls that was going to be the huge problem. And
it could be though, right?
Well,
she might need to start tearing walls apart and looking, don't you think?
That I don't know. I can't say that for sure. The biggest thing is on the fire side of things, we're not electricians. What we do observe is if we see things like electrical cords being used as permanent wiring, if we see, like I brought today, these multi-port, multi-plug, long power strip adapters, they shouldn't be daisy-chained together. We shouldn't be running, I mean, winter's coming, but you shouldn't be running two of the your in-room heaters or your space heaters off of a power tap like this. Those are the kind of things that we're trying to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
It's simple. And it's little things that if we can avoid them, we can hopefully prevent fires in the future.
We're talking about fire safety and prevention on the Repcolite Home Improvement Show. And we are here in the studio with Brett Grundyke. He's the fire marshal for Holland. Now, Brett, I know that the state fire marshal was just in Holland, and I'm guessing you learned all kinds of great things from him.
Or at least we'll say you did.
No, it was. It was very good. Fire Marshal Kevin Selmayr was here. He gave a town hall meeting at Holland High School, and quite a few representatives from local fire departments were there in attendance, and he gave us a lot of good information, not only on training, but some things that we can try to do to improve home fire safety. And one of the things he made a point of is smoke is toxic. And I mean, that sounds very simple to say, but I don't think that anybody, unless you've been there and done it, been at that fire, you don't recognize how toxic it is. And so one of the things that he was providing us information on was that if you're going to have a fire in your home, you should be recognizing your fastest way out of your residence or the fastest way out of a business. As you're going through a business or you're going, especially a business, there should be exit signs. So pay attention to those sort of things on how to get out quickly in the event that somebody says that there's a fire in a business. Now, in your own home, you should be mindful of at least two ways out, but especially the fastest way out.
Right.
And that's going to be something that you have to look at. I mean, we've done some fire safety inspections in homes and found residences where, especially in condos, they have a first floor that walks out to a driveway or a common area on the front side of the house. But on the backside, it's a deck.
Right.
And that's something to be mindful of that you should be prepared for. Have a plan in the event that you do have that fire in your home and you have to know two ways out.
Now, okay, can you hold it there for just a second? Because I do have a question about that. But we're out of time on this segment. Brett, can you hang over the break?
You bet.
And we'll be back on the other side after these wonderful commercials. We'll be back in the studio with Brett Grundyke to talk about some more fire safety. Stay tuned.
If you want to take your DIY skills up a rung, the Repcolite Home Improvement Show is here to give you a boost on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson.
The boring half of the show.
Yeah, right.
No, well, a little bit.
I bring the believability.
You bring believability and I bring all of the fun.
Yeah, the class clown.
Yeah, we're in the studio with Brett Grundyke, the Holland Fire Marshal. Brett, thanks for being with us and staying for a second segment.
Sure, yeah, thank you.
Sometimes people after the first segment
don't want to
hang
around.
You? Yeah, they've had enough. But no, I want to get back to a question because I don't know. Maybe I'm not thinking this through clearly, which would be a real surprise to Betsy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but you talked about like a condo situation. The whole idea was knowing multiple ways out of our home in case of a fire. We need to know this based on where we're at, the quickest way out. And then you talked about a condo situation where the exit is onto a deck. I know at my folks' condo association, a lot of the decks don't have an exit down. What do you do in a situation like that if that's the situation you're stuck with?
So one of the biggest things we've tried to evaluate when we go to these places is how can we control the flow path? How can we protect people when they're in their bedrooms if it walks out onto
What do you mean the flow path?
So the flow path is going to be this environment that's created when a fire is burning in a space. It kind of creates its own climate.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to have cool air that's being pulled in from below, and you're going to have hot, superheated gases that are going to be blowing out from above. And so as that's taking place, the fire is moving towards the path that is open. So that's going to be the flow path.
Okay.
If we can control that, we can limit the spread of the fire and the spread of the toxic smoke that's going to be moving throughout the inside of the building.
So how do you do that?
It's as simple as closing a door. If you were to find a fire in your own home, it'd be as simple as closing a door and limiting the movement of that fire and that smoke within
the... It's going to slow it?
It's going to control it very strongly.
So if it's in a bedroom or the bathroom or something like that, close the door and get out through the rest of the house.
Absolutely, yeah. If you find it, if you see it, isolate it. Close the door, control the flow path, and then move to where the fire isn't and move to where the smoke isn't.
What happens if it's in your kitchen or your living room or something, one of these big open areas, then do you go to a bedroom and try to get out the window and close the door? I mean, how do you do that if your normal exit would be through what happens to be the fire in the open space?
So it's at that point that we encourage people to isolate themselves, but do not isolate yourself in a place that you cannot get out of. So basements would be totally off limits in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Isolate yourself in a bedroom with windows or that walks out onto that deck. Isolate yourself from the fire, isolate yourself from the smoke. And then hopefully what we're encouraging people to have is have your cell phone with you. Most people mm-hmm. have them with you at all times.
Right.
And when you call 911 and when you report that fire, tell us where you're at in the house.
Okay.
That is so important that we know where you are.
Before I post this on social media.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Okay. Put that way in the back.
Okay.
Way
just,
on the
just want to make
way
sure.
on the back burner, so to speak.
Because sometimes
you can
know.
Talk about that after they've come and put out the fire. And...
I don't post anything on social media, and I know there's a lot of those that are faked.
Yes.
But there is a lot of dumb stuff that people post while they're in the middle of a bad situation.
Yes. Yeah.
So children. Social media is for later.
Yeah.
Right now,
much
just be
later.
Safe.
Right. Okay, now let's talk about the toxicity of smoke, because you briefly touched on it earlier, how we just don't quite understand how really terrible it is for us.
No, it's awful. And it'll take you down way faster than you think. Most of the adult casualties that we find them actually in a doorway trying to get away from or get out from the smoke. It's that toxic. It'll take you down that quickly. From the time you hear your detectors going off in your home, and everybody should have working smoke detectors in their mm-hmm. home. From the time that you hear them going off till the time you're exposed to the smoke, you have a very limited amount of time when you're in the cloud itself to be able to breathe and to get out. So the toxicity is incredible. And one of the two things that we look at that are in smoke that make it so toxic are carbon monoxide
mm-hmm.
and hydrogen cyanide. So those are the two most common toxic gases or toxic components of that smoke cloud that we're concerned and worried about.
Well, and that's why you guys wear tanks of air when you go into fires.
Exactly.
I mean, that's how you stay alive to save the rest of us. So just think about that next time. If you're ever in a fire, heaven forbid, you guys have the gear. We don't. Do everything you can to stay safe.
Well, and I guess I'm curious when you say you find people in the doorways. You mean they're close to getting out?
Yes. Yeah. That's the shocking thing about how toxic the smoke is once you see it, once you're exposed to it, once you're breathing it in, you have a very limited time to get to clean, fresh air and be able to start breathing effectively again.
Now, do you anticipate that they're disoriented? And they can't find their way out?
It's disorienting.
So it's a combination of everything.
It's disorienting. You get that adrenaline rush of that there's truly something dangerous going on. And you have to try to focus on what you're doing to find that door or crawl, get below the smoke, and know the interior of your own home on how to get out. Remember, smoke is always going to be rising. Smoke's going to be on the higher portions of the room. And you ideally want to get below it and then get to a safe area or isolate yourself in a room that's not exposed to the smoke. You'll have quite a bit of time, surprisingly, if you stay in a room and control a doorway or open your own windows and try to get out that way.
Now, one of the things that it's got me thinking about is, yeah, all the kids' rooms have windows and easy access out.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's really making me think I got to take some time to just make sure that in the heat of the moment, they understand, you know, what the fire alarm means or the smoke alarm means, and to calmly open a window and get themselves out. Because, you know, the older kids, no problem. But I'm thinking of my younger daughter, Hannah. I don't know how many windows she's open necessarily. We live in the day and age of air conditioning, so the windows are permanently closed sometimes.
Right.
Just got to make sure that they know their way out and can think through a situation when the pressure's on.
Yeah, absolutely. Recognize that smoke is the most toxic part of the fire, and it moves, it propagates so freely through a home.
The scariest scenario for me is getting out and finding myself just out, just me, and wondering about everybody in.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do in a situation like that?
So the biggest thing there is, once you're out, the goal here is to practice first so we can try to avoid those is everybody out type of situations. So we practice these things. It's the same things we're encouraging in the schools. One of the best vehicles we have is for the kids in the schools to educate them. They go home. They work with their families, moms, dads, grandparents, brothers, sisters, things like that. They work with them, and then they encourage them to have a plan, have a meeting place. The concern is the fires at night. And knowing how to safely evacuate your own home to get away from those nighttime fires. So having a plan, knowing how you're going to get out, knowing that the window is an option if you're on the first floor, not jumping out of the second floor.
Right.
Knowing that that is an option, and then getting out safely, meeting outside, taking a head count, and confirming that everybody's out safely. And if you can, if you're seeing that, okay, I see the fire on the way out, it's in a storage room in my house, or it's in a kitchen that I can isolate with a door, do that. Isolate that fire in place so that it's going to limit the flame spread, limit the smoke spread, and then buy everybody a little bit more time to get out of the house.
So parents, when your kids come home and tell you we got to practice, listen to them and do them a favor and actually practice with them. Because I think the tendency is for parents to go, well, we know you learned it in school and we know what to do, so we're all set. So actually practice with the kids.
Yeah, it can be a cool family bonding experience. I mean, everybody taking care of one another in that regard, recognizing how to get out, and it's just, you can kind of make it a game.
All right, Brett, that is a ton of stuff for all of us to contemplate. I encourage everyone out there to actually take what you've said and put it into practice and remember these things when something does happen. And by all means, go check your extension cords and your power strips and all that
smoke
stuff.
Smoke alarms.
Yeah, so that Brett doesn't have to come out and save you.
Make sure those systems aren't overloaded. Make sure your smoke detectors work. One on every floor of your house, one in every sleeping area, and make sure the batteries work.
Perfect. Brett, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, when we come back, I was recently out at a job site, and I discovered that there are all kinds of little things that people may not know about that they might actually be doing wrong. We'll tell you what they are when we come back. Stay tuned.
If you want to take your DIY skills up a rung, the Repco Light Home Improvement Show is here to give you a boost.
Well, Betsy, every now and then a customer has a paint project, and this can be a contractor or a homeowner, you know, pretty much anybody.
Right.
They get into a project and they realize this is way bigger than I thought.
Right.
Or this situation right here is really confusing. I'm not sure what to do.
Yeah, and that's usually when they give us a call or stop into our stores. And sometimes we can answer the question over the phone and, you know, help ease their worries. And sometimes we actually have to go out to the job site and take a look to get a better
actually
recommendation.
See what's going on before you can make a good recommendation. Now, you just did this, and you came back very excited because you saw a lot of stuff. I don't think the people that you visited were as excited about all the stuff you saw. But it's really good material for the radio.
Yeah, it was absolutely incredible. You know, their biggest problem that they have with the building that I looked at, it's an exterior of a building. Their biggest problem is they are fighting water. And, you know, they really don't have a whole lot of gutters on that building, on, at least on one side, mm-hmm. which is a huge problem. And all that water has taken its toll over the 20 years since it was painted last. So
no, it's a very interesting situation. And as we talked about it, we thought we need to share this on the radio because even though this isn't your particular project,
mm-hmm.
well, unless it really is yours.
Right. Right.
We won't give your name out or anything.
No.
But even if this isn't your project, mm-hmm. there's still stuff in here that will apply yeah. to so many different situations.
Yeah.
So let's just start with it. What are some of the very first things that jumped out at you? Let's talk about the problem and then the fix.
Well, one of the first things that I noticed when I walked up to the building was the chimney on top. And actually, they have two chimneys on this particular building.
And they're both on top. Of the roof, right?
Yes. One is really on top, like way, way, way up there where it's very hard to see. But I did notice that some of the bricks were cracking or crumbling or completely missing, which is a problem. And that's when the faces come off of the bricks, which you sometimes see, that's called spalling. And that means that water and moisture has gotten down into that brick. It's soaked in. And then because we get cold winters and water freezes, it pops the face off of that brick and you end up with no face on it, just the rough brick behind.
Right. And more moisture gets in.
Yep.
And the process continues and the brick yeah. can degrade quite severely and honestly quite quickly if you don't keep up on it. It's a common
right.
problem.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean for the people out there listening now? It means get out right now and take a look at your chimney,
yeah.
at the brick that you've got on the side of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Just make sure that you don't have this going on or starting. You know, now might be a great time for the chimney inspection because
yeah.
a lot of us, I know I'm going to be on the roof in the next couple of weeks, chimney sweeping my chimney.
You know, right.
getting ready for mm-hmm. the upcoming cold weather and all the fires that we'll have in the house, in the
yep.
fireplace. Fire Marshal Brett Grondyke, in case you're listening, will be safe. But when you're up there, inspect the chimney.
Yeah.
If you notice that the brick is starting to spall, or if you've got cracks,
mm-hmm.
or you're concerned that moisture could be an issue, we do have a great fix. It's called Lifetime Waterproofer.
Yeah.
And it's a penetrant that will actually just soak right into the brick.
Mm-hmm.
It's got silicone in it. It will resist water unlike
yeah.
anything else.
Yes.
You could, you know, definitely tarp off the roof where you're working. You can spray it on. We've got a little wallpaper
yeah,
stripper sprayer. It's,
yeah,
it's a little tiny pump up sprayer.
Yep.
It's really kind of cute.
Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
my size.
Yes,
but,
it is.
But you could put that on the chimney
yep.
and that will seal it up. That will prevent new moisture from getting in and you could stop a problem. You
right.
don't want to let it get to the point where you're going to need a mason out there to fix it. But if
yeah.
you get up there and you realize that you might be beyond the point of just putting a waterproofer
mm-hmm.
on there, still take the time. Get a mason out there. It will cost you some money,
mm-hmm.
all of that. Nobody likes to do that. But letting it go gets far worse.
Right. Now, I want to point out that that waterproofer is actually for something that you don't want to paint over. So any kind of brick or block that you will never want to put paint on. Because of that silicone, it'll repel
right.
everything.
And it's got to be a bare surface.
And,
so,
right. And it has to be a bare concrete or brick.
Exactly.
So on the same job site, they actually had spalling brick that's currently painted. And that's a problem because all of that paint is holding that moisture so nicely against all of that brick. And again, it's causing the brick to spall and fall off. So it's taking the layer of paint plus the face of the brick off. And they do want to paint again over this brick. So
what do they need to do in that situation?
In this situation, we're recommending that they use a product that Repcolite actually makes. It's called Krylox. It's a waterborne sealer that they can just paint over their like regular paint and it'll seal up that brick. And then they can paint over it with a really good exterior acrylic paint.
Now, in order to get to that point, there's a lot of prep work that needs to be done.
There
and in
is.
Fact, the reason, part of the reason that they're having this problem with the peeling paint and the spalling brick is,
mm-hmm.
like Betsy said earlier, moisture. They have no gutters on that side.
Right, correct.
And that's a really good point. If you look at the other side of this building that has gutters,
mm-hmm.
it still has issues.
Yeah, but
they're dramatically reduced.
Yep.
So get gutters up on your home.
Right.
So that's one thing.
Yes.
The second thing is that whoever did the work 20 years ago didn't do very good prep work at all.
No.
So that's why they're struggling with this.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got to get that down to a very sound surface before they put paint on it. They can't just put new paint or this Krylox over top. Krylox won't take this old paint that's peeling and bond it back
on
to the surface.
Right.
So they're going to power wash it.
Mm-hmm.
In some instances, they're going to have to scrape.
They're going to have to scrape. They're also going to have to bleach because they have some mold, mildew, and moss growing on there. And if you don't get that off, it'll pop your new paint off.
Right. But before they get to even that, and before they even start scraping, one of the things, now in this instance, they're okay. Mm-hmm. But we do need to remember about lead paint.
Yeah.
Anything painted prior to 1978 could have lead in the paint, and you don't want to be scraping that. So don't jump into a project if your paint is older than that. You're going to want to ask some questions and figure out exactly what you need to do to be safe while you work and contain all of that.
Right. So once you've got it all cleaned up, then you're ready again for that Krylox and then just the paint over top, and that should take care of your problems. But again, make sure that you put up gutters, because all of this is pointless if you don't do the work to prevent it from happening again.
So the thing that everybody can get out of that is if you've got brick or block that's painted and peeling, make sure you do the prep work to get it sound. Make sure you watch out for lead paint and all of that. But jump into it. Don't let it get worse and worse and worse.
Right.
Get going on that and get it fixed. The sooner you fix it, the better it's going to be. The longer you let it go, the worse it's going to get. Now, one last problem that you talked about was a lot of rotting wood around the window trim and the window sills and all of that, and even along the eaves. And that was so sad because the problem with that, you know, we went out and looked at it, and the problem was they'd never primed. So about 20 years ago, they painted it, and they scraped it. They did a nice job because it looks like it was all prepped well, except the primer.
Yeah.
The people who did the work all those years ago skipped the primer.
Right.
And now the current people have to deal with that and try to fix it. They're stuck with peeling paint, but also rotting wood. And if they had just used the right primer, an oil-based primer that would have soaked into the wood and protected it a little more, they'd have a lot less rotting to be dealing with right now.
Yeah, so the main things to take away from this are, number one, make sure you're doing the maintenance. You know, it's going to save you a whole lot of time and money in the long run if you keep up on things.
Nobody
like that.
Nobody likes doing these little projects.
No.
But if you do them, when you see them, you don't end up with 20 years worth of how do I dig out from this and how do I fix it? Because in a lot of the situations we saw, they're not just at the repaint stage.
Mm-hmm.
They're at the replace stage.
Yeah.
And that's way more expensive.
It is.
Don't let your home get to that point. It's our biggest investment. Keep up on it.
Also, make sure you're doing the proper prep work and make sure you're doing all of it. Not just some of it, not just most of it. Do all of it, because that's what's going to make your paint last as long as possible. And you don't want to have to be doing this work over and over again. And last but not least, make sure that you are finding the causes of all of these problems and fixing them. If you have a water problem, make sure you're doing the gutters and all the things that we actually talked about last week on the show so that you don't have this continued problem.
Right. Fixing it without fixing and addressing the cause of the problem is just a waste of money and time.
Right.
And one last lesson.
Mm-hmm.
If you're confused and don't know what to do on whatever project you're working on, that's what we're here for.
Right.
Call any RepcoLite or Port City Paint Store or drop us an email at radio@repcolite.com, and Betsy and I will do our best to give you the advice you need to get going.
Yes.
Now, that's the end.
That
we're all done.
The end.
If you want to listen to this episode one more time or even several more times, which I'm sure many people are itching for this link right now, you just to repcolite.com and there it is. You can listen to your heart's content.
Right. And don't forget about our color and design event as long as you're at repcolite.com. You can buy tickets online. The event is November 7th, and it's a great night out. Wine, food, and really great speakers. And by the way, there will be some very cool swag bags, a coupon for some free paint. And
free
who doesn't
paint.
Love that?
Right. It's a coupon for a free gallon of Benjamin Moore paint, whatever kind of paint you want.
Right.
Just bring it into the store, get whatever color, whatever product. It's a free gallon.
Yeah.
I mean,
doesn't love that?
Well, and the price of the ticket is $10.
Yes.
So what you're getting for that $10, which is going to be donated to Home Repair Services out of Grand Rapids.
Right.
So you'll feel good about donating to a good cause.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have a great night.
Yes.
Learn all kinds of stuff. And you get a free gallon of paint out of the mix.
Right. Make sure you go and buy your tickets now, though, because seating is limited. So go get your tickets before they're sold out.
Exactly. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. Remember, if you're about to lose your DIY sanity, we can help you fix that crazy.
And we'll help you figure out how to solve that paint dilemma at your home, no matter what it is. Even if it's something crazy, like woodpeckers pecking holes in your siding with their face knives.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
We'll help you.
Face knife.
Thanks for listening.